This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Hey, thanks for listening to Remarkable Results Radio. I'm your host, Carm Capriotto, the pioneer of automotive aftermarket podcasts. Glad to have you here. Now, we are consistently producing episodes about the things you care about. Now, after the overwhelming response to our first supply chain episode, I decided to follow up with part two while I was at Apex. Now, every day seems like there's a new challenge or problem to overcome. The squeeze of supply issues and parts availability are felt throughout our entire industry. But did you ever stop to consider that this crisis maybe isn't a supply chain problem, but rather an increase in demand, which is actually a good problem to have? This has forced every manufacturer to improve their efficiency and focus on a better connection with shops in order to service them properly. Now let's bring both sides together and continue to keep the dialogue open and transparent. Hey, thanks to our partners Apex and Shopware for providing you this episode. You know, Apex 2021, it's in the record books, and Apex did live up to presenting leading-edge technology from suppliers, but also a great job of showcasing emerging technology of tomorrow. You had to see that SVI display. You have plenty of time to plan for 2022. It's November 1st through the 3rd, 2022. Apex, now more than ever. Hey, when was the last time you ordered something online, like a burger from Grubhub, your groceries from Amazon? Well, how about things that are really high-tech, like auto repair? Shopware's online interactive repair orders let you do just that. Check it out for yourself on the web at getshopware.com. You know, the influence and reach we've worked so hard to support our industry's growth and metamorphosis continues with new content designed for you to stretch your learning curve. Hey, a warm welcome to a great panel on supply chain part two. You hear some noise in the background? I'm in Joe's garage inside of Repair Shop HQ here at Apex 2021. And it is one of the most fascinating and different experiences that I think any service professional can have. And if you're listening to this, of course, Apex is over. And I'm trying to tell you that you missed out on something really cool. And I'm right next to the BG booth. They actually put a lift. And there's exhaust fans or hoses that it's an amazing event that's going here at Apex. But Paul McCarthy pulled together a hell of a panel back in August, and I'm sure you listened to the episode. It was 237. It was a Town Hall Academy. We had Bruce Roening, Brian Norco, Malcolm Sismore on. We were talking about supply chain in August, but it's changed a bit since then. Let me introduce my panel. Paul McCarthy's back with us, president of NCEO and president of AASA. Thanks for being here, Paul.
It's my pleasure. Thanks
for having us. By the way, the keynote that we just came out of, you guys, you and Bill Hamby did a fabulous job. And I want to talk a little bit about that. You're going to come back and do an interview with me, I think, on Thursday to talk about the great work that you guys are doing, especially with Right to Repair. John Hannigan is with us, the CEO of Cloyes. Hey, John.
Hey there. Great to be here with you.
Oh, thanks, man.
Thank you, Paul, for the invite.
Yeah. And Tim Albritton is here, Director of Business Development and Marketing and Market Research at BG Products.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Your booth is right next door.
It looks pretty awesome.
Wow. I don't know what you're doing over there, but I think it's going to be fun. Wow. Are you guys going to actually use BG Products on that vehicle that's running over there?
Correct. We're going to do on-vehicle services, just as though you were in a shop or a dealership, and conducting, we're going to do four different levels of services over there: fuel, trans, coolant.
Man, and you can't get this anywhere else.
It's very good.
Than here.
On a show floor.
Right here, right now.
Yeah.
And so if you're listening to this, and even if it's 9 months later, and you said, let me go back and listen to that episode on supply chain, because it's still worse. plan to be here at Apex in 2022. Okay, guys, I can't help but watch news channels. I can't help but look at any news articles. Supply chain. And the panel this morning that you so nicely pulled together, Paul, that talked a little bit about supply chain, we really don't realize as an industry, as service professionals, the people that are saying, why the hell don't they have that part? Or why does it take so long to get it? It's so complicated. I have come to realize way back in August, I had a singular thing, and that is we just don't have enough people, to realizing it's even more. You know, we have a raw materials issue. We have a people issue. We have a who's going to pay more to get the damn boat at the dock, and who's going to hire their own charter, and who's going to fly planes. And the other thing that really hit me this morning, guys, was the labor shortage that started this whole COVID thing. And people weren't in the plants. We were shut down for a while. It all goes back to COVID almost month one, and no one had a playbook on how this was all going to play out. And then China closed some ports. And so the reason that we're doing part two is to provide the word patience, okay, to the industry. Because I am convinced that the manufacturers that supply us and have for years and will continue to, they're working their butts off to fix the problem. Am I right, John?
Yes, you are. We're a 100-year-old company. We celebrated this year. Big milestone for the company. So we've been around a long time. We've never seen anything like this before either, though. So you don't really have a lot of experience to draw on. What we've learned, though, it started, this is not new news, and the government got involved with the port and all of those things, changes. This has been around, to your point, you know, about a year ago it started. And there's not a silver bullet to address it. It's several different key points you have to do in execution around getting around this. We've been able to survive it very nicely with our distributor customers and our end users. Fortunately, the quality of our product has not suffered. It actually hasn't been enhanced, which we've stayed laser focused on, because it's very easy to find band-aids that don't, you know, that actually make it worse later in life. So our fill rates have stayed up. They've come back down a couple of points, but our operations team does a great job with the folks in China that are boots on the ground with our suppliers, and we have a long relationship with them. But, you know, early on, we started to build our inventory and made those investments. The board was never against it. They just said, John, makes perfect sense. We knew there was a storm coming. It would not get better. It would get worse. And our supply chain partners all said, you know, that does make sense. So we made that investment, along with several other things we'll talk about that help us get through it. But yeah, we're 100 years old and growing. We're doing fine.
Tim, are you lacking any products?
So just to kind of tag along with what John was saying, we're 50 years this year. This is our 50th anniversary.
Congratulations.
So, same to you guys. Wow. We're half the age you guys are. And, you know, 50 years and 100 years doesn't happen by accident. You know, one thing that I will tell you that we've certainly learned over the last 18 months is just, you know, immense communication with folks outside of our organization, our partner suppliers. You know, as we were talking before this session, you know, our supply chain logistics team, their cars are in the parking lot early in the morning and their cars are still in the parking lot late at night. You know, that group is working tremendously hard to make sure that, you know, we're able to deliver the way our customers expect us to. You know, to have supply chain and demand go through everything the way that it has over the last 18 months, it's really unheard of for us. So, you know, that's required a lot of patience, a lot of extra communication. You know, our teams, they certainly, they're working hard. We're learning new ways to work through this. We're working smarter. You know, we're going to learn a lot. You know, in I've heard our supply chain logistics team talk about, we don't want to go back to the way it was. We're very efficient and effective right now. So, you know, from our perspective, you know, we're a global company. Every market is a little bit different for us. So, you know, we're certainly learning a lot as we go. We're changing. We're breaking a lot of rules. We're trying to figure out how we can meet expectations. And just like John said, you know, quality cannot take a hiccup here. We've got to continue to deliver the way they expect us to.
We've heard, don't buy a TV this Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
They're pushing them through. They're not sure they're going to be built right. So, you know, you go to Best Buy, there's 5,000 TVs in a pallet somewhere, right?
Yeah, there are. And it kind of comes back to the brand name and what BG employs has built over the 1,500 years. We're not going to risk. And so I'm sure the other brands of TVs that you see and such, I took my son, I have an 11-year-old son, and we were out at Best Buy looking at some computer stuff. You're right, Ian. There's TVs all over the place. They're trying to get ready for holidays, right? But LG, some of the brands that are there, I would stick with. As long as you see a brand, I think you can stick with it.
Guys, there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes.
I heard this morning on the news, mark me down here, that as much as there was a Halloween merchandise shortage, they had the biggest Halloween in sales ever. So nature found a way. I always love to say that. You know, capitalism found a way. Paul, you said it this morning on the keynote stage. You said it on my show in August about the analogy to World War II.
Yeah, I think we said in August that this might be the biggest supply chain disruption we've ever seen since World War II. And I think we can now say in November, it absolutely is the biggest supply chain disruption since World War II. In its persistence, just in the fact, and I think you heard it from these folks, every day has a new challenge for manufacturers. I solved last week's problem, and this week has a new problem. It's a different material. It's a different issue. Nylon's now an issue, which was in perfectly good shape a few months ago. So it's just this continuing challenge and the continuing challenge. And I just want to mention on the quality front, because I think that is so key, because people are concerned. You know, there may be some folks floating around out there just trying to get whatever they can. But the brands you trust, every member I talk to, they are determined that there's nothing that's coming out, despite this high level of demand, despite this disruption, it always needs to have that quality that we promise, that we guarantee, and that dedication. So I think your shops can trust those brands that they trust.
I mean, you're connected like scar tissue with all the manufacturers and all the suppliers. Anything you've heard in the last week that was a surprise to you?
Well, I think one of the biggest surprises is kind of the million-dollar question of when is this back to normal? And we recently surveyed our members and just came back, and the average time was 11.4 months. That's a long time.
What, to get a container?
No, 11.4 months until we're back to normal on the supply chain.
Okay.
But the first thing I'd say is the answers were all over the map. People just don't know.
Yeah.
Because, again, every day has a different challenge. But we'd recast it that maybe the question is when do things start to get better? When do shops just get a little bit easier and better for shops? And I think there is some hope there. Mm-hmm. The coolest statistic that came out of our survey of members is that fill rates have improved significantly since earlier in the year. All the inbound issues, all the raw material issues, all the you know, people issues are just as bad as they were earlier in the year. But we've been able to improve those fill rates, and it's because of the ingenuity of suppliers, the solutions that you've been hearing Tim and John talk about. And also, I'd say, the collaboration up and down the supply chain, really figuring out what do shops really need? How do we fill this?
Right.
And I think it's just that dedication, everybody back on this side of the supply chain, to get the shops what they need to satisfy our customers. So we've gotten better. And to narrow that gap is pretty amazing considering what we're facing.
Everything is more data-driven now than has been in the past. Tim, I don't know how you feel, but in the case of ploys, we are data-driven regarding future programming and our planning stand. We brought in people that we hadn't looked at before in an area regarding planning, on both in over on the supply chain side in the Far East, as well as here, and also in Mexico for our international distribution. Because data is the key. If we don't have the right data, now especially in forecasting demand, it really hurts. Because, you know, Tim, like you and I were talking about, just-in-time is not around anymore.
Right.
It's more about, can we actually do as good a job as we can on forecasting that maybe we'll get it within the 30-day window we thought we'd get it, or the 60-day window to forecast it. So that, Paul, to your point, I think we're much more data-driven and making better decisions, like the panel talked about. Mm-hmm. And I think the disciplines we've learned in this time since the pandemic, we won't forget these. In fact, it's really, we got to do that, Tim, in our organizations. And I will do that, and of course, don't forget what you learned. And I expect that when I see the meetings coming going forward.
Yeah, I'd add on to what John's saying. From a data perspective, we've got our market research team, and we're tasking them with more questions and more forecasts, and not even really getting into the raw material side of it, but just what are we seeing as far as, you know, the next 2 to 5 years? What are we seeing as far as around the world? Even core pockets, East Coast versus West Coast. What does the car park look like? What do powertrains look like? So we're really jumping over to the data side. And yeah, it was 2 or 3 years ago, our senior leadership in John's position, they were a little bit skeptical on it. Now all of a sudden, they're data hungry. So we've got our data team. We're swamped, and we're you know, whether it's sales analysis, whether it's forecast, historical backlook, you know, it's really interesting where we're going with that. It's a really good point, John.
You know, the other point is we are so tied to new product introductions because we're a 100-year-old company, and our growth is going to come from new product introductions, not necessarily price increases, things like that. So we have to be able to, and we're not missing the beat there. Yeah. We may miss a few, maybe 6 months on an introduction, but we have a certain number of platforms that we're going to introduce every single year, and our engineers are tied to that, and it's tied back to the supply chain cycle. We use a lot of trading houses in the beginning before we see that a product's really going to work and really stick with our customer base. So all of that, we have to still be able to do that to our growth. So it's a very complicated world we're dealing with right now, that's, we've never been challenged like this. I'm sure the same thing with you, Tim.
Yeah.
And Paul, you're seeing with the members. It's never been changed. There's disciplines we will learn from this.
Right. You're absolutely right, John. From our perspective, I want things to get back to normal. And again, we've got some folks on our end saying, well, what we've learned right now, we don't necessarily want to go back that way. You know, we're being very efficient and effective right now. We've learned so much. You know, and John's right, as far as single source, just in time, I think that may be gone for quite a while now. You know, we're wanting to make sure that we have product in hand. We want to make sure that we have zero disruptions or minimize the disruptions for our customers, our partners. So we're working, trying to do absolutely everything. We're looking at avenues that 2 years ago we may not have looked at. And that, I think that's a really good thing for our organization.
Multiple sources per SKU has now become the norm.
It's
for
the
us.
Norm. I would agree.
So I have a new introduction to a new manufacturing term. You're talking just in time, right? It's a manufacturing strategy. How about this? Can we get it?
Well put.
Well, the answer to that has to be yes.
Absolutely.
So, and to your point, multiple sources per SKU, we just can't rely on one. I can't imagine the challenge it is to keep your QC up everywhere.
Absolutely. You have to keep the quality piece is so critical. Quality control is what you mean.
Yeah.
And by being able to source, what Dave Haley does as our Senior VP of Operations, and he's been on a couple of panels, I think, Paul, with your team. His team with our leader over in China who does our sourcing and our trading house checking, our engineers check every SKU of every trading house part once a year for quality. And then every one of our contract manufacturers has to prove their ISO and IATF credentials every single year with them. We don't visit them because of COVID, but they have to give it to us and show us they renewed those. So that kind of discipline on them, and I'm fanatical. Did you get it this year? Where are you? It's all planned to see when they come in and actually get those credentials into us.
Hey, Carm here. I find out the real reasons we are facing price increases. Carm here. Well, I can't say enough about the quality of instructors and the high level of technical and management training that was offered inside Repair Shop HQ during Apex 2021. Hey, it's in the record books, but the great news is that show organizers for Apex 2022 are hard at work again, assembling the best and the brightest instructors and the most timely and needed training for shop owners and technicians. And now watch for a robust schedule of training and product demos on topics such as engine performance diagnostic strategies, how to be an effective leader, wheel alignment and ADAS calibrations, controller area networks, and using social media to grow your business, just to name a few. With this caliber of training, make sure Apex 2022 is on your calendar. Now that's November 1st through the 3rd in Las Vegas. And together, let's make 2022 the year of growing sales, profits, and productivity for your business. Listen here for more Apex 2022 training and registration information. The automotive industry is blazing through with so many twists and turns and changes. Careful not to crash. Yet amidst it all, the demand for repair is a constant. So the questions remain, will repair shops adapt or die? Well, our friends at Shopware Shop Management Software get it. Their CEO is a shop owner. They understand what it takes to repair cars, and they're ready for the next big thing in automotive. Shopware tailors mainstream web-based technology to the needs of the industry's leading repair shops. You can run entirely digital, phone optional, and paper-free. Interactive online repair orders will not only meet the needs of contemporary drivers, but they are blown away by the experience. Connecting the aftermarket together, Shopware's ecosystem enables next-generation shop efficiency and customer satisfaction without compromise. Full service onboarding and best-in-class support provide everything a shop needs to transform its business and stay competitive long into the future. Enjoy more accurate quotes, more profitable jobs, busier technicians, and of course, happier customers. On the web at getshopware.com. I keep thinking about spikes, people ordering ahead.
Yeah.
And you adjusting your, oh my God, is this a real spike or is this just a buying toilet paper spike?
In Tim's case, there's spikes, I think, more so because you're more of a commodity type product or chemical product, where in my side, it's more of it waits till it breaks and then we get it. We don't necessarily, you know, shops aren't stocking timing chain kits, right? But in your case, they are stocking your product.
Correct. So for us, the dangerous word we hear is allocation. And that always scares us because, you know, we've got long time partners for, you know, our various products. And what we're trying to do is make it so that, you know, we always have the recipe, the parts and pieces of the recipe, if you will. So from our internal, our QC perspective, they're testing products constantly. One day to the next day, you know, what's coming in is changing. And there's not a whole lot we can do about it other than be prepared. Yeah. So one day, you know, we may think the next day we're getting 1 million pounds of X part of the recipe, and we find out the next day, no, you're only getting 500,000 pounds of it. So it's really, you know, taxed our team to be super flexible. You know, as far as QC, we're doing more quality checks of product that we're considering. You know, every product part of the recipe that comes in, our team tests to make sure that it's exactly how we expect it. So that's another group of folks that their cars are in the parking lot early and their cars are in the parking lot late at night too. So
one of the things, Tim, that your company did a great job, and when we worked together at Ford, at Cloy's, we had now put together a group called the Shop Masters program. And Barry Harris, our VP of marketing, who you know well, he's done a great job introducing that, because Cloy's wasn't as close to the shop owners before. They always work with the distributor's partner. Great relationships, nothing wrong with that.
Amen.
But if you're not there,
amen.
If you're not there, and so we have almost 300,000 email addresses we now connect with every month, talking about our new product introductions, our training videos to make sure they do the job right. Because a typical timing chain repairs could be 4 hours, could be 15 hours. We can't have a problem there.
Right.
And our shop masters, there's 3,500 of them now on board within like 5 months that have jumped on to get that information early. And we actually have used, we have a shop master's council of 5 shop owners now.
Wow.
And they give us feedback on our instructions. Are they easy to use? They put them. So we're trying to connect that shop owner closer to us as a manufacturer like never before.
And we have similar programs like John and Cloy's. You know, for us being out in the marketplace, you know, we like to say we're always, you know, in the county you're in, we're around as much as, you know, a dealership or a shop wants to see us, whether that's daily or weekly. You know, we are upping our game, so to speak. We're adding more training modules. Our LMS, you know, has certainly become more and more prevalent. We're doing the carrot and stick type deal with technicians and shop owners and in-person training, virtual training, you know, you name it, and we're willing and wanting to deliver it. So, you know, that's an important part of working all the way through from supply chain to the end customer, making sure that it's as seamless as possible and constantly meeting or exceeding expectations from our side.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, Carm, I mean, you're hearing this, of just how important it is for the manufacturers to hear from your listeners, from the shops, and just how important we take that feedback. And I've been hearing this from all the manufacturers. It's one of the good things of a crisis is it's made all the manufacturers refocus on that. Every manufacturer said, I got to be better connected with the shops. I got to understand their needs. I got to service them better. And it's helped bring us together. And
we're excited. I'm excited to hear that. I know my listeners are excited to hear the fact that the manufacturers are finally lending a sense of importance and credibility to the people out in the street that actually, you know, buy and, you know, throw away the box.
You're not just the customer, you're the boss.
Yeah, exactly right. And thank God no one here has yet to utter the word installer, because you know what happens. I jump all over you if you say that. And the service professional. And look at inside at Joe's Garage here. I'm so impressed with the number of shop owners that are here. This is only hour one, guys. Mm-hmm. And it looks great. So let's go back to supply chain, and let me throw this word out to you. One word starts with a P, pricing.
Okay.
Prices are going up. Mm-hmm. Ease the minds of our listenership that it's just not, we found an opportunity to make more money.
Not at all. We had to do some price increases in August. We hadn't done any in 2 years. So we waited, and then by that time, because of the packaging cost increases, and everyone sees inflation starting to come in, but this started early during the pandemic. And you have to be very specific as you do your price increases by SKU, because our distributor partners want to understand, tell me why you're increasing these. To your point, Carmen, it's not just haphazardly. You have to show raw material price increases by SKU what you're doing. So you have to justify these. But we had that information, and we sat down, is my point about data before, and then our distributors understood the price increase wasn't in the single digits, it wasn't, you know, double digit type increases, because we've been able to manage the cost with multiple sources, as I mentioned before.
So you looked at SKUs, you looked at the cost of that SKU,
yep.
You applied a recovery margin, if you will, to it because of the increased cost, and then you flowed the whole thing out.
That's right.
And you realize you had a single-digit increase.
When you flow it all out, to your point, I mean, in high performance is a little higher because of the content that you use in the product, but a little less than some of the other products we had on our timing chain sets. So we knew by product.
I can't imagine the bidding that's going on to get containers, bidding for positioning. Chartering and the cost of that, and the raw material shortage. Thus, the labor shortage, and the more that people are paying, and the more overtime they're probably giving to a normal, 40-hour week person.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure right now on companies. Whether you're an exporter or an importer, you've hit on a lot of things internally. Getting folks, maintaining folks. I always tell our HR team that, the best employees we have are the ones that we have right now, that we should be working really hard to keep those folks and communicating to them, telling them thank you. We've set some record goal months for us for manufacturing and shipping, and, our senior leadership team, they're tasked with doing some real unique things to tell folks thank you, a sincere thank you. As far as pricing, I agree with John again as well here. We have to... Everybody's expecting price increases right now, but they're asking more questions than I would contend they've ever asked before. Okay, so that forces us to be very, very knowledgeable with our price increases that we're putting out. So, for example, we also just went through a price increase on certain products, not across the board, and it wasn't across the board at a fixed percentage. Certain products actually, based on volume, we were able to have them go up less, but they still went up a little bit. Other products, we're having, supply issues. There's so much demand, so supply and demand's a bit out of whack. So those went up a little bit higher. But on average, we made sure that we were still very competitive, in the marketplace. You certainly, sorry for repeating, but we have to be, very, very clear and transparent on these price increases right now. Folks are expecting them, but they're not just sitting back and taking them. So, again, John, that's what we've seen on our side.
Exactly. That's the same thing over here. I'd like, Carm, kind of go back to a point you made about the containers. If you go back before the pandemic, and Paul, please let me know if you agree with this or not, but it was about $1,500 per container to come over, maybe $1,800. It's $18,000, $20,000 now. Now, it's coming down in the last month after what happened in L.A., opening 24/7. I saw the container prices coming down.
Mm-hmm.
But $1,800 to $18,000, that's unbelievable. And then air freight, we're paying for air freight. The Chloe's team knows, and they get a hold of me and my CFO, Troy Angston, said, "You this okay?" Yes, go. Our customers deserve the product.
And even if you have it here, then there's the issue of the trucks and getting things within the country. So I think what you're hearing here, Carm, is, nobody's liking the prices, but this is authentic, what people are saying. It's because the raw materials have gone up. It's because the labor costs have gone up 30%. It's because the cost of transportation have gone up. So these are, unfortunately, genuinely the cost to produce and deliver these goods have gone up, and that's what folks are seeing. I think our only hope, because nobody likes the price increases, is kind of like Henry Ford and the $5 a day working thing. We are seeing wages go up, so I think our one hope is that wages of good aftermarket customers, that they'll go up enough to be able to handle some of this pricing, and we hope it'll be a little rising tide, lifts all boats, and shops stay busy.
From our perspective, we're looking at economic trends, macroeconomic trends, microeconomic trends, and, thankfully we still have a very strong economy. So as far as what the end customer is willing to accept, they're wanting to travel. From our perspective, they're wanting to drive their vehicle. They're wanting to do road trip vacations. We all know that the car park is getting older. I think that plays in our favor as well. While we may not be happy with the price of gas at the pump, we want to go out and do things. So from a service perspective, we're very encouraged with a lot that we're seeing. The OEs are certainly taxed with getting new vehicles out. Every new vehicle that's made is effectively sold before it gets to the dealership. We all know what's going on with the used car business right now. So what does that all translate to on the service side? It translates to a lot of demand. And for BG products, I assume Chloe's is much the same. We're very thankful that the macro market is still incredibly strong. There's a lot of turnover as far as the market, as far as cash on hand, so to speak. So I think all of that is very helpful. But still, we're all we're all very knowledge hungry right now as far as, you know, what looks like what's coming next. You know, we're not so willing to just sit back and just kind of wait for it to happen to us now. John, that's kind of how we're taking a look at it from our side.
Back to your point, the aftermarket's grown for a number of years, and everything we see, the projections, we stay with that CAGR of 2, 3, 4% up until 2035, 2040. The BEV market is coming. We see that. But as far as entering the aftermarket and having an impact on the ICE side, not for a number of years. I think the biggest issue that I'm seeing from being out, calling on customers, again, being able to get back out face-to-face, which is more than anything we need right now, is that it's more about, you know, where I can find a technician because I got too much demand. And that is a unique situation for our industry to be in. And I'm an ASC certified tech, and I'm working with the board, and it's like, we got to get more people into the system.
Yeah, absolutely correct. You know, that could be another pinch point that we see. The shops that we're in, the service side, they're just so taxed to have the folks behind, you know, the folks working on the vehicles. So, you know, we're asked a lot of those same questions with our, you know, 700 plus folks that are out in the marketplace every day. You know, help us find those. I have a son who's a senior this year and getting ready to go over to the college side, and he's got three of his buddies who are gearheads. They're all going the Votech route, and they all want to become technicians, and they're pretty excited about it. I've had them out to BG and walk them through our facility just to try to fuel their fire and let them see how awesome our industry is. So, my goodness, the number of challenges that are out there for us right now, it's not overwhelming because I look at it very positively. This is what's going to make our industry stronger for the next 50 or 100 years. It's pretty exciting. It's what really has me smiling when I drive to work in the morning.
Thrilled to hear that. We talk about apprenticing and internships and the technician shortage often, as you can only imagine, on our shows. Guys, this has been great. I loved all the great cherries of wisdom that have happened here to hopefully alleviate some of the, I don't know what's around the next corner, what's going on with my suppliers, my distributors, the manufacturers. So this part two was wonderful. How did you plan for this 20%+ growth in the traditional side of the business? Because everybody's busy, guys. And so part of maybe why I can't get what I need to fix the car, and now it takes 3 days to do a timing change up, and it's only a 4-hour job, is because we have a bigger demand. Wow. It's like, oh my God, who wants to argue about that? We're busy. We're booked out a week and a half. So things are really good.
They are very good, on your point. But we need to stay disciplined to keep it continuing to grow like it is. I think that I will never regret the inventory investment that I really made the board sign up to do early in the spring, because that was a multi-million-dollar investment that took us 6 months to receive all of it because of what we've gone through as far as the shortages on containers and such. But it's the planning side of it, to be ready for the demand that's coming, that is really the critical part, and the data behind it to be make the right investment in your inventory. We got a couple overstock situations, but hats off to Dave Ailey and his team, because they really have really done a great job making sure we have the right part in stock and in our distributor network, because we use category management skills with our distributors to make sure it's closest to their customer.
Yeah. You may have made one of the smartest decisions for Cloyes ever when we read your bio, your legacy bio someday.
Don't do that.
A little bit of foresight. But you said it, Carm. We keep talking about this as a supply chain problem. This is really a demand problem. We had the mother of all bullwhip effects, that unbelievable decline, then the unbelievable rise, and this continued strong demand. And that's what we're adjusting to, and the system's adjusting to. These, as painful as this is for every shop to just try to get the part you need, this is really coming out of the category of good problems. It's really coming because there is this demand. People need their cars. We're coming out of out of COVID with more dependence on the auto than we had going into it, and how people want to live and where they want to live. And in the end, this is a demand issue.
Hey, guys, I'm not sure we can go on for 2 or 3 hours about this, but I think we got the essence of a really good part two on supply chain, Paul. Let's go around the room, put a bow on this. Let's do a last call. Paul McCarthy, President and CEO of AASA.
Well, I just hope you heard that the manufacturers, the suppliers, we want exactly the same thing the shops do. We are desperately trying as hard as possible to get you the parts, tools, chemicals, technologies you need just to get these vehicles repaired. We're on the same side. We're working hard towards the same goal, and we want you to be successful. And it's nice to have this demand together. It's good for the aftermarket.
I know, isn't it interesting? John Hannigan, CEO, Cloyes, great company.
Thank you. Yes, sir. I would like to just say, customers, you are the boss. Back to what Paul said earlier, we really want to become laser-focused even better than we ever have before, to listening to you, getting your demands back to us on what you need. We want to keep our quality up on our side for Cloyes with our Shop Masters group. It's fantastic to get the feedback from you as our end users. You are the king.
Thanks so much, John. Appreciate that. Tim Albritton, Director of Business Development and Market Research of BG Products. Your last call, sir.
Sure. You know, from our perspective, what a challenge, what an opportunity. You know, we've learned so much over the last 18 to 24 months. You know, a lot of us, a lot of our senior leadership, we know we're working smarter, faster. You know, we're certainly happy with what we've learned so far, and we as well do not want to let our customers down. The shops, their customers, our commitment to them remains unchanged. You know, we're putting our team through a lot of work and learning and hours, and they've risen to this, and we're so thankful for that. So we're excited. We're very, very optimistic with what's in front of us, and, you know, challenge accepted. So
wow, finally. What do you think of this repair shop HQ and Joe's Garage?
Fantastic.
Guys? Isn't it something?
It is. It's so exciting.
I mean, I know you had your hands in this a little bit, Paul.
But it's just great to see, you know, bays on a show floor. We've never had it before, but to have all this tools, this training, and frankly, it's even more important for shops and techs and service professionals to come to Apex, because with all this new technology we're seeing in vehicles, we need the training. We need to be prepared. And the manufacturers, the suppliers, they're ready. We're ready to help everybody succeed in the future. And here's where you can find out about it.
Well said, Paul. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.